Scott Gottlieb here, and welcome in. You're listening to All Ball, All Basketball, All the Time. But we don't necessarily break down X and O's. We try and share the stories of some of these incredible coaches, players, managers, former players, former coaches, whatever. That's what we share right here. Okay, so here's what I want to do with this one. This is Todd Simon. Todd Simon's the head coach of Southern Utah University. Remember, this is a guy who took over a program that everyone said you can't win there. And you know what they just did? They won the Big Sky. So they won the Big Sky. They're going to move to the WAC, which is, I think, a little bit tougher competition. Big Sky used to be a great league, not as much anymore, but they're moving to the WAC. Todd's an unbelievable dude. Wait till you hear this story, okay? He was a newlywed, and he was the head coach or assistant coach at Findlay Prep, and his wife and he moved into a house, five-bedroom house, with 12 high school kids that were playing at Findlay Prep. Is that a good enough tease? I think it is. Again, we have other podcasts out there you'll enjoy, none maybe as much as this one. Here's the head coach of the Southern Utah Thunderbirds, Big Sky champions for 2021, Todd Simon.
Todd, I want to get to your squad this year and the turnaround of the program, but come on, let me start with you as a basketball player. Your first memory of falling in love with hoop was where and when?
Very young. I grew up in the Bad Boys influenced area of Michigan back when they were just getting going, and those early memories of the Pistons, Celtics, Pistons, Lakers. Those early days. Magic Johnson being from the area. So that's kind of the first memories of falling in love with basketball and seeing that brand of style, the swagger they played with, and the toughness. And that's really
so you were the guy. Everybody else hated them. You were the guy that loved them.
Absolutely loved them. I mean, we were playing the driveway. I remember me and my brother playing the driveway, and Dad broke his foot in like five places. It was no layups.
No lay you. You played Lambeer. I want to be Lambeer. Well, I want to be Mahorn. I want to be Lambeer. I want to be Mahorn.
That's exactly anyway. Right. Those are the two.
Yeah. So, okay. So what area in Michigan, what you paint the picture of what it's like, growing up?
Just a beautiful place. It's as good a place on earth as you'll find, with a small town, about 1,000 people, one stoplight, about 20 miles northwest of Lansing. And, just a sports town. Every day there's a different game and a different sport. Cornfields all surrounding. Just your traditional rural upbringing in a sports-infused town of, people that care for each other. It's really kind of a throwback town. And to this day, those people are still, this camaraderie is still there.
Why'd you go to Central Michigan?
I was an academics, academically gifted. School was, I would probably say, easy for me, I guess. And so, I had a couple of choices, some academic scholarships. And one of the situations there was they had a Centrales program that they gave, 10 full rides or whatever it was a year. And so I got a chance and competed for that and was able to get that scholarship and free education, and it was close to home, and had a great experience up there. It was really a good place.
Okay, so what about ball? Now, in terms of, you're a ball player growing up, you go to Central Michigan, and what happens?
Yeah, so I knew at a fairly young age that basketball wasn't going to be my ticket in terms of playing and all that stuff. I mean, I was realistic, and quite frankly, I have a nerve disease. Right, that was diagnosed in junior high school type age. But I knew that there was something wrong much earlier, and so I don't have a lot of peripheral nerves that are functioning. So all of a sudden, as you start getting a little bit older, and you start realizing, like, golly, all my buddies and everybody that we play with are progressing. And now all of a sudden, as a player, when you start having bad games and struggling or ball, turning balls over, you're like, what in the world's going on here? That's no fun. But I knew at a young age, like, hey, coaching was how I could engage and still be a part of this thing. And so I go to Central Michigan and actually coached high school a JV program at Harrison High School up in Northern Michigan while I was in college. And just started cutting my teeth there and helped a little bit with the women's program at Central Michigan, helped a little bit camps and whatnot with the men's program. So that just kind of cut my teeth in college, get a head start.
Okay. So like, tell me about this nerve disease. So what, when you say like, it's explain to somebody who doesn't have it, what is it? And what does it actually do that hurts your ability to, in terms of playing sports?
Yeah, you know, so it's a form of muscular dystrophy, but it's kind of a little bit of a, you know, there's 13 types of muscular dystrophy, and it's kind of the more of the cousin of it in some ways. But it, essentially, like if you think about your, iPhone phone charger, and you strip away the outer coating of the wire, it leaves the wire exposed, right? And if you touch that wire, it'll essentially trip off the connection, right? Everyone's had a bad connection. And that's essentially what I deal with. All my nerves don't have protection. And so they're always flickering and it's more of a painful disease than anything. But, you know, when you're a lot of times it's in a later onset in life and whatnot, but mine came out as a kid, so I don't know any different. You know,
how do you manage the pain? Like, what is there medication? Is it you have to avoid certain things? How do you manage this? Because nerve pain, and I'm frankly lucky to have had it, but lucky to have not had it, right? But nerve pain is something that apparently everybody's has. Like, you have no idea the pain because you can't. It's not like you can put ice on it. You know, like it's like underneath the surface and it just throbs, right? That's what people who have, you know, traumatic injuries, and there's somebody's nerve is severed and then it grows back. Like, that nerve pain is supposed to be the worst. How do you manage that pain at a young age?
Well, the good thing for me is that I haven't known any better, but what you do is you just make your adjustments. You have two choices, you know, at a young age. I can sit on government disability for the next 80 years and not do a whole lot, or, you know, buckle down and roll with it. But in reality, it's a strength, because if I lay around or just sitting around, that's when, you know, you start thinking about like, oh my gosh, this and this are on the grocery list of what's actually killing me right now. But if I just keep doing stuff, if I stay on the phone, if I stay in film or playing, if I'm just busy for 17 hours a day, you know, then it's good. So it's actually become an unbelievable strength, because it just keeps me from just being, you know, sitting around and thinking about, oh man, this stinks. But so I've just kind of turned that into strength.
So you're a college student and you start coaching high school ball. What was that like?
It was great. It was a team, you know, struggling program. Obviously you do best you can. I'm not quite sure they knew how young I was at the time. I've always looked a little older than I probably really was, but it was a good, it was a great experience. I mean, you sit there and you're in front of a team, and you have to figure it out, and you got young eyes looking at you, and they're about 5 years younger than what I was. And you have to figure it out. And that's the best part about coaching and it becomes just, to this day, what the philosophy is, you've got to make these players better. And if you make the players better, you got a chance to win. And that's what it became about.
Okay. So you get done with college, right? And what was the plan?
So yeah, college was interesting. I had I got a couple degrees, one in management information systems, another one in sports studies. The sports studies one was just kind of fun. You know, I'll be honest with you, I was kind of steered away from athletics because everyone, you know, having this academic scholarship and all the peers in this little program were becoming doctors and biophysicists. And they're like, why do you want to be a coach? Like, this is, you're wasting your talent type of thing. It was those speeches. But I did the sports studies thing as a second degree just for fun, because I enjoyed it. And then, I'd already got a full-time job. I'd kind of elevated up in a startup company and had a staff, and I just sat there and said, this is probably where I want to be when I'm 30, 35. And I'm already did it before I graduated, and then said, nah, this ain't it. And, you know, so decided, you know, I need to get outside my comfort zone. And we just moved to California, and head out west. Let's just hit a different button, hit a restart. Let's try to do something. And I thought that was as good a move as we could have made. And we got out west and then started watching programs out there, try to come into practices, and latch down at Pepperdine with Paul Westfall as a volunteer, and start getting my feet wet in college coaching.
Okay, so you make it sound so easy, right? Like, I just came out to California. Like, did you drive? Did you fly? Yeah. Were you alone? Did you have a job? Did you have money? Okay, so wait, so you're working in a bit. What was the business called, the startup that you were in?
So it was a company called Last Mile Technologies. It was kind of on the front end of you know, internet, high speed internet back in early 2000 or what around that area. But so I was part of a company, and they spun off, and then you know, I was an
intern. They became Google.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I haven't really followed much, but I just knew that that wasn't my passion. You know, it was great to get kind of get going.
Sure.
And they offered me a great spot at Fulton, you know, and I just said, nah, this isn't my passion. And
so what were you making? What would they offer you to stay?
I think it was like 45, something like that. I mean, which is
45 and you're like 22 in Michigan, and you're like, hey, you know, it's not terrible. So when you told your family, like, hey, I want to move to California and maybe be a ball coach, what was that conversation like?
You know, I was a pretty strong-willed young man, so I don't think it surprised them. I mean, it was never, once I kind of made up my mind on certain things, you know, there wasn't a lot of conversation. It was like, okay, I'm going to California, and that was a fun period, but I'll see you, you know, I'll be back, you know, at some point. I'll see you.
Okay, so what year is this?
This is 2003.
Okay, so 2003, what kind of car did you pack up to drive to California?
So I had a nice tan Toyota Camry. And
solid.
Yeah. And we got a caravan. My one of my best friends, and now my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time. We packed up, got a little U-Haul, and got the caravan going across the country.
Okay, so you guys, so it's three of you, two cars, yeah. Or one car?
Three cars, three of us, and we had a bunch of buddies and people that just kind of, yeah, this will be fun. This is roll. So.
Oh, this sounds awesome. So, okay, you leave Michigan. Where'd you stop?
Yeah, we broke down in, I think, Nebraska. So we had to put a car on a trailer, and you name it.
Who broke down? You, your wife?
It was actually my wife's car. So we just rotated cars out because we were already had one on the trailer anyways, because we had the U-Haul.
And, what kind of car did she have? What kind of hoopty did she have that's breaking down?
She had I'm trying to remember what she had. I think she had, that's a great question. I think it was a Pontiac, but that's a good question.
And that's why they don't make Pontiacs anymore.
Yeah, so we get to California, and we had been out there a few times, and I made some networking, did some networking with potentially, you know, a group that was with the, you know, the Dodgers. You know, we had a few things kind of going that wasn't just completely blind. But, you know, that was right in that period where the Dodgers get sold, and a couple of the contacts I have get kind of wiped out. You know, but in the meantime, you know, I kind of – get involved in another startup, doing some you know, computer software sales that were kind of working with some companies out of India to just kind of stay afloat, right? And just kind of work on the side. That way I kind of fund being a volunteer and doing the basketball stuff. But all in my spare time, it was just about, you know, being in the gym. But we got involved in some Hollywood stuff, doing some promotions. And you know, I think one of my strengths is I never never fear being told no. Getting and so we've kind of found our way into some fun stuff out there and pursued a few of those things. But it was good. It was a good period in LA.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right. So, I mean, everybody says, like, I want to coach at Pepperdine. You know, you walk out of Firestone Fieldhouse and you see the ocean. How did you make contact with Westfall? What was that like in order to help him out?
Yeah, I mean, I was literally just kind of going up and down the coast, and I wanted to be in gyms and be in practices and just take notes. All I wanted to do was learn. You know, I just wanted to get better and understand it. And then they're gracious enough to share a bunch of film, you know, and I just on my own just wanted to break down film. I wanted to watch and understand their concepts, and the coaches there were great, where they let me sit in there and start asking them about their coverages. And I was just a young guy just trying to learn, trying to figure it all out. And then one day they said, well, you keep coming here, why you want to you can, we don't have anything for you, but if you want to help us out, you're already kind of doing some stuff. And I said, yeah, sure, that'd be great. And so I just kind of volunteered there and got feet wet in recruiting organization camps and you name it, and workouts, all that good stuff. So that was kind of the indoctrination. And Coach Westfall is just such a great human being.
Yeah.
It was really good to see that contrast.
One, if you were to obviously coach in the NBA, coach in college, was a great player, And I inducted him into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. People forget how great a player he was. One thing you take away from him as a coach that was a strength?
Compassion. Like I thought his style was so different than what I'd seen. You know, in the Midwest, it's Bob Knight, Tom Izzo. I mean, that's the Shad, the larger than life figures. And there's an intensity to every practice and an intensity to competition. And Coach Westfall was very mild mannered in his style. But the players equally still wanted to run through a wall for him. And that was fascinating to me because I hadn't seen that maybe style of coaching necessarily where you don't necessarily have the, confrontations to get it out of players. It was more of, I want to play for this guy. So that was a great takeaway.
Interesting. Okay. So what made you pack up and move to Vegas?
So, after that year, my wife was a teacher at San Fernando High. She's a high school English teacher there. It was a interesting year. But for her, she had some college roommates. We've always loved the Las Vegas and visited there quite a bit. So we got a couple, some real estate there. And so she was going to go to Vegas and teach. And I was going to stay in LA and kind of do what we were doing and kind of make it work. And then right before that next season, UNLV had a, assistant video position, a guy left for the NBA. And I said, well, hey, let me drive over. And back then, I had the bleach blonde hair down to past my shoulders, the whole thing. And I'm looking at Coach Kruger's background, the profile, the Midwest. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to shave this off real quick and make a trip to Great Clips, go interview for their little spot. And fortunately, I did and got the position there for a couple bucks. And then we just kind of proceeded on from Las Vegas. As I told my wife, I said, we probably, if you're doing this coaching thing, we're going to be 3 years and out. Just don't expect to be anywhere for very long. And then we ended up being in Vegas for, 12, 13 years.
So you get to Vegas and you're working for Lon Kruger, and he's remarkable. I mean, I almost went to play for him when he was in Florida, and he obviously played for my dad. My dad was a freshman team coach and the assistant to varsity. So I have an incredible amount of respect for not only what he's always been able to do, really win everywhere, but he's the only guy to really win at Vegas since Targ left, right? What is it about Lon Kruger that's allowed him to not just be successful, but sustain that success through different generations of players?
He's as tough of an individual as you'll come across. And by that, I mean, I think his mental toughness and assuredness is incredible. There's never too high, never too low. You don't, after a tough loss, you wouldn't know whether you just won by 30 or lost by 30, you know? And I think that's something that's a very, very strong leadership characteristic for his programs. You know, I think the players, everyone that works for him, plays for him, wants to absolutely just empty the tank for him, because you respect him so much as a man, and you believe that he genuinely cares, because he does. He's a genuine human being. And he absolutely knows his, I mean, he's such a brilliant basketball mind. I mean, it really is. And he's as good as they get. I mean, I would put him up there in the greats. He's never necessarily had that blue blood job or that type of thing. He's always taken on tough challenges, programs on probation or whatnot, and built them back to life and built fan bases back to life. And it's such an incredible characteristic that he has.
It really is. Okay. So how'd the Finley job come to be?
Yeah. So right around 2006, they wanted this prep school idea had been floating around. Group investors led by Mr. Finley wanted to, kind of get an option for guys, for a prep school type option out west. And back then there was none. And so this was kind of an idea to honor, his parents, and, he's such a philanthropist, and this was an idea. And so they approached Mike Peck, who was the video coordinator at UNLV, and he was going to go jump over there and be a part of that. And so I kind of filled his role for maybe a month, and they kind of came to me and said, hey, we're going to need someone to live with all these players and, in a house and being an assistant over there. And is that something you'd be interested in? In the conversation, I to this day credit Coach Kruger. He was very honest with me because, hey, I was on top of the world now. I was actually going to make a little bit of money as a video coordinator spot, and he and I had talked, and I said, well, I enjoy the recruiting process. I enjoy getting on the floor, and he said, well, this is a way you can do that and work on your craft, whereas this role you're going to kind of do more of the same. You've done 2 years of this. You've kind of seen, what I'm thinking. You kind of know what the basketball is here. And that conversation kind of stuck. And I said, yeah, I want to spread our wings in recruiting, particularly get relationships. And that's how it kind of came to be. That was the main decision maker. And so that summer, my wife and I got married on a Saturday, and she stayed in Michigan. And I flew out on Monday to get the house ready for having 12 players moving in with us immediately. So
wait. So you just got married and yep. You had 12 players living in a house.
Yeah, in that we were 20, I think I was 25. My wife was 25 as well. And we just get married in 5-bedroom house, 12 players, and two of us. Let's roll.
How was that? How was that?
Well, here I'm 25 and I'm thinking, okay, this, coming from the college level, you're kind of thinking one way. And then you're picking up guys at the airport that don't speak English. You're picking up guys that are bringing, Pokemon cards. And you're like, oh, yeah, some of these guys are 15 years old. Some of them need parental figures. And it was, it accelerated our, we were in it at that point. We were semi-parents, semi-coaches, workout guy. I mean, you name the role. You were in it because 15 to 20 is a tricky time, especially for young basketball players emotionally and all that good stuff. So it was a great living experience. I mean, that experience living in that house with those young athletes and going through the process and seeing and hearing all that every single night was by far the best thing I've ever done in my career.
Really?
No question. Because now I'm in the mind of what a coach says in practice and what that player hears are two different things. And I would say it's a different thing maybe 60% of the time. So, you might go have in practice and be like, oh, this speech was great, da 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 da. And this player right here heard something completely different. And that lesson was unbelievable. I mean, just the way to manage players' psyche, how to get the best out of them, I think to this day has been advantageous.
But also gives you the other side of the recruiting process too. You know how, like, when you get off the phone with a kid now as a recruiter, how is that taken? What is that conversation like? Now you're on the other side of it, you know, with the kids.
No question. Well, and I took, you know, I'm a note taker, and I just took a Bible of notes, because guys would come off official visits. I mean, guys would get off the phone with a coach, and I'd say, hey, what'd you think of that guy? And then just hear them absolutely roast that coach for 5 minutes, you know, or say, hey, I have no idea what school that was. I have no idea who I just talked to. And the fascinating side of that part of recruiting, you know, was like, holy smokes. They see through the sales pitches. They see through the phony. It was very interesting. It was very
okay. So your favorite kid you guys ever had at the house?
Ooh, I had a lot of favorites.
Only get one.
Man.
Your wife would adopt this kid. Would have him marry your firstborn daughter.
Great question. That's a great question. Let me think. I mean, everyone loved Jorge Gutierrez.
So Jorge Gutierrez, here's what my brother told me. I use Jorge, by the way, as a talking point for my kids and for guys that I talked to. Actually, a different pod. I had Justin Bean on. And Justin Bean has that Jorge Gutierrez quality where every game he's ever played, a guy on the other team wants to fight him.
Yep.
And it gets under their skin. And not that he just plays, but just the way in which the toughness by which he plays, and he just pisses him off. And it's an unbelievable weapon to have on. And what Greg told me was he walked in your guy's gym and he just got the job, assistant job at Cal. And he was looking for other guys. And you're like, the Mexican kid with the ponytail, that's the one you want.
Yep.
And he was like, why? Yes. You said, because he wins every game. And oh yeah, by the way, somebody wants to fight him on the other team. And you know what? That happened in college. Every game he ever played, he became Pac-12 Player of the Year. He played in the NBA. And, like, he came to you guys from, like, an apartment in Denver, right?
Correct. Yep, he sure did. He sure did.
Yeah, so kids from Mexico, limited English, playing in Denver, comes to your house. And what was he like to be a part of your life in that house?
You know, he was pretty quiet. He's quiet, but everyone knew, like, his toughness, you know, and he had a great smile, you know, but he was such a respectful young man, like just a good hearted person. And I remember he had kind of hurt his knee before he was going to come to us, but we kind of saw it anyways. We'd saw enough. And we said, yeah. And so he comes back, his knee's kind of banged up a little bit and a little bit out of shape. And I think it was maybe one comment like, hey, you know, not in great shape. And it probably took him 4 days don't work me out, lock the gym door. I got this myself. And then next thing you know, you're like, what? You can't you should sell some videos because you can't transform your body that quick in real life. And he did. He was just an absolute warrior. I mean, he wanted everyone's heart on the floor every single day.
So how did it come to be you went back to UNLV to work for Dave Rice?
So it was great. You know, I became the head coach at Finley over time. Coach Peck did a great job. I worked under Coach Beaton there for a minute. And then that last year, you know, Coach Peck goes to the G League as a head coach, and I take it over. And we have a great season with Nigel Williams-Goss, Christian Wood. And you know, so I was happy as a clam. I mean, this was going to be the pinnacle. Like I could stay there for 100 years and love that program, you know, dearly. And you know, we kind of had it rolling. So that was my deal. But then the college stuff, you know, every year there was a couple things, but I wasn't interested. I liked where we were living. I liked all that. And then the UNLV thing was just different because that was, you know, a place that was revered. We didn't have to uproot the family. It was a different option than going to a Big East or a Big Ten school.
But now you had to kick all those kids out of your house.
Yeah. And by that time, by the time I was the head coach, we had gotten out of the house. We had graduated from the house at that stage. So we had some normalcy but it was interesting, but it just, and I respect Dave a ton. Dave's such a good person. I felt like we could get players. I wanted to really see if our ability to get players translated and the way we develop players, like, did that translate to the college level? You're always going to have.
Why did you? I mean, obviously, brought Christian with you. You guys had, Anthony Bennett was there. You guys had super talented. Why didn't it work?
We were too young. To be honest with you, no one wants to hear that, and it's such a cliche. But we had such roster turnover. I kind of got there in July of year three. And then the roster from year three to year four. Year four, we had number three recruiting class in the country. But they were young, like Rashad Vaughn, Pat McCaw, and Christian Wood was a sophomore. And these guys are young guys. Rashad is a 17-year-old college freshman. And so they're all just trying to figure it out with all great aspirations. And we could beat anybody, but we could lose to anybody when you're young like that. Never really quite found that stable multiple year piece at the point guard position. That was probably our Achilles heel. Cause I think if we maybe got that a little bit more 2-3 year organized point guard, just to kind of get everybody on the same page, we could have, but we were, when you're kind of having 1 year guys at that spot, as you get a little bit, out of sorts at times. So, and then by the time that last year came around, the pressure maybe had built to where it was impacting them, our players. But it was great lessons. I mean, just phenomenal lessons for a young early 30s guy to go through all that and take away things. I wouldn't do it any different, because now we can see all the things that would do a little bit differently to manage those situations.
So you have this really talented crew, and it starts to fall apart, and they let Dave go, and you become interim. Take me through that day and how you found out.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't see those things in college sports at the time. Now you're starting to see it more and more often, the mid-year type of thing. But it was the pressure was mounting a little bit. We had earlier in the season, knocked off Oregon, who beat the Pac, who won the Pac-12. We knocked off Indiana, who won the Big Ten that year. So we had some early success, and then had a little rough patch toward the end of that December, and then played three tight games, one all close games, and go start 0-3 in the league. Right, we lose that buzzer against Fresno State, and then have the Colorado State Wyoming trip, and. Have leads and just kind of fall behind in both of those two games. So the pressure was kind of mounting there was talk, and you're at this point, you're just trying to keep your head down. You're just trying to keep working, keep pounding the rock and hoping something good happens. And then it kind of gets different. It was a Sunday morning and get a phone call that, hey, we're making a change. This is what we would like you to do. And you kind of run through your questions, because you're I'm loyal to Dave, and hey, what are my options here? No, we're asking you to do this. We don't want you to campaign for the job. We're going to do a national search, but we want to do this. And then at that point for me, you just always ask, okay, what's the right thing to do? For me, it was about, okay, we brought in all these players. They deserve to have a chance of success and have some normalcy or try to compete. Let's not make it about anything else other than that. And so that was the main thing. And so you just had to make the main thing. And the main thing was to make sure that we tried to give them an experience, try to keep coaching up these guys, give them everything we got for the rest of this year. And that's what we did from that point on.
So the season is done. When did you know that you wouldn't get the job?
They never really said anything like that. I just knew that they, I wasn't going to campaign. I wasn't going to do it. They asked me, they Essence, they said they were going to do a national deal, and they just kind of said, kind of sit tight, just sit tight, and you don't know what's going to happen. And but at that point, you know, we started hot. I think, I don't know if we won our first four games after, you know, after the change, and it was amazing. I went from no college experience to 10 days later having college JDs reaching out to my me or my people saying, hey, you know, this guy's got college experience. And every game was on TV back then for us, you know, with our roster and whatnot. And so that kind of helps. So now, you know, looking at some, you know, 3-4 options, some search firms reaching out. And so it's a little bit different deal. And as the season wrapped up, you know, it was exhausting of a year. It was exhausting. And, you know, you want to be around, you know, some more positive energy and that type of thing. It just got a little sideways there, especially with all the injuries and guys that were out. It's just like, this wasn't meant to be. And so Southern Utah was one of those schools that kind of reached out and was, you know, let's have a conversation. We'll have a conversation. We get knocked out after the second or third round or whatever it was in the conference tournament, and said, let's just sit down and have a conversation. You know, I had a vision, having you sitting on guaranteed money for a couple of years left on your deal, you feel pretty good about having some options. At the worst case, go back to, you know, I love the prep level. I love doing that. Maybe get a prep program. I mean, I had some things that I was very okay with. And, but then just having these conversations and talking to the AD here at the time, I kind of said, this is, if I was interested, this is what I would need. And he said, well, you are interested. This is who we are. And we said, okay, let's talk more. And that one thing led to another. And I said, you know what, you find out who you are in this business. I believe that I enjoy the building process. That's what everyone has their thing. Yeah, if I was running the best program in the country tomorrow that's already been running, I wouldn't enjoy that as much as taking on a challenge. And everyone has got their thing. But for me, that was what I learned that I enjoyed. And that's why, and I said, well, this is kind of the ultimate challenge. It had been, you know, as low as you can get. They were 2-27 not long before, and you know, 5-24 or whatever it was. And so, okay, let's do this and let's see. It's kind of like moving to California. Let's get outside of comfort zone, hit a reset, and throw yourself back in the middle of the ocean, try to find your way back.
Okay, so you get there. How bad was it?
Well, there was certainly we had some stuff that we needed to get aligned, you know, without question. You know how it goes. When you're losing, you start pressing. And, you know, I think we had to get the right people in the room from our roster, staff, everybody, just a reset. You know, take sometimes once you're trying something and it doesn't kind of work, and you just need a reset. And it doesn't mean anyone's way was poor or whatever. It just wasn't working. So we had to kind of get a fresh reset. We had to kind of clean up a few things with player attrition, especially with losing. It's like a compounding issue, because then your APR starts going down because you're trying to replace players and guys are not in a good headspace and you name it. So we had a lot of cleanup to do. And I always say one of the more underrated things now when taking over a program is how long's the tear down before the buildup? And we had a little bit of a tear down here, and that's not disrespectful. It's just, we had to infuse our way, and it was going to take a little bit longer to get.
Who is the first foundational piece you signed?
That's a great question. Our very first signee was our starting center this year, who's been with us for all 5 years. Big kid by the name of Ivan Madunich, who just does everything right.
So you get the job, his specific recruitment, how did it actually work?
I'm calling all precincts, say, hey, you know, I'm here now. You know, I'm going to take care of your guys. It's going to be the same player development system that we've had over in the past. You can trust us. Send me your next guy.
Where was he?
He was so he was at prep school, and then he was just working out in L.A. Trying to figure out his college decision. And
so you had him on a list. Somebody recommended him.
Yeah, right? Yep. just a straight recommendation, you know, with one of our international guys that said, yeah, hey.
Who?
You know, Roddy Filipovich. And okay. And Roddy said, hey, yeah, we do got a guy, and come on through. And so we did. Got in my car. I think I drove from Cedar City to wherever he was, Santa Barbara or wherever they're working out as, you know, at the time, and said, well, we got to do this quick because the windows close quick on these things. So he was the first one, and he redshirted last year, and he was our starting center this year.
I mean, that's amazing, right? I mean, 5 years for him to be the first guy and the first signee to be in your starting center when you win the league 5 years later is remarkable. That's the definition of a foundational piece.
No question. These guys, he's leaving here, this MBA, the whole thing. I mean, it's an unbelievable story.
Okay, so here's my question is this. You have obviously know the different levels of recruit, right? From having your time in prep and from being, but when you come from being in Vegas and when you pointed out you had, there's two one and dones on that last team, right? You guys recruiting the top of the cream off the top. How hard is that to change the evaluation to, will this work in Southern Utah's league, right? It's like a different level, different type of vision for what a guy is going to look like. How difficult is that transition to mentally in terms of your evals?
You know, and I see that all the time. I see that all the time now in hires because of my time at Finley. We used to sit there and prognosticate, like, this guy's going to be a great Division I. You know, I remember Brad Stevens when he was an assistant coach at Butler, like, oh, that guy's going to be good. You know, or Shaka Smart when he was in the MAC. You know, but certain guys were like, yeah, that guy's going to be good. You know, this guy gets it. This guy's going to be able to translate. And you see that. And I think it's a lot of the same lines of player evaluation. I think you see the coaches that kind of shift levels. I think that's very difficult. And you see a lot of
I think a lot of them. I think the hardest one, Todd, honestly, is like, say right now, at Southern Utah, say you, you know, I'm not trying to chase you away from your job, but you get a bigger job. A lot of guys, they take those recruits with them. And oftentimes, sometimes it's right because you're recruiting at a higher level than your actual school. But sometimes, you know, you bring guys like, man, why did he recruit him? He's like, yeah, well, he signed him at a low major and he was just his guy. Like, yeah, but he's not good enough for this level. I see that a lot where when coaches go up, they think they were recruiting a higher level of player and they really weren't. They really recruiting well for their level.
No question. I mean, you said it best. I mean, and I think sometimes in this profession, I think sometimes you can think it's you, not the players.
Yeah.
I see it all the time. I mean, you see it too. I mean, and we're all goofy. We all got egos and all that stuff. But I got news for you. None of us coaches have ever made a basket. We can lead the horse to water, but we ain't drinking. And I think you see that a bunch. But you have to kind of know what your surroundings are, what are you competing against? Because every one of these levels is a little bit different. But coming down here, we knew that we were going to have to get Mountain West players. I'm a pretty simple guy. I just know this: if I have better players, you know, if I'm recruiting above our league, if I have better players in our league, that, or at least top four, I want to be top four every position. Like, then I'm going to look a lot smarter. So
So when I'm in the first couple of years, there's still a lot of losses sustained. I guess the first question, was there ever a doubt? Did you ever look up the final scoreboard the first year and be like, shit, I don't know, man.
Well, we knew we had the four starters kind of move on. And the first edict was, here, clean this up. And we had some issues off the floor and some of those type of things. And so I said, okay, but understand it's going to, you know, we went into that first year with 10 or 11 scholarship guys. We didn't fill a bunch of the spots. And, we're going to try to clean up the APR a little bit and give us a little bit of more of a solid ground. Was that the right choice? I don't know. But, you know, we fought like crazy. It was almost like a year-long practice. Let's set a tone of how this is going to work. And, we kind of knew. I had a little perspective, like, I would even say maybe that group overachieved, even though we piled up some L's. And the second year we started to be, okay, this is kind of we kind of knew, okay, we're rounding this thing into shape, you know, for year 3, 4, and 5. And that's when we started to kind of start having some success and hit postseasons and all that good stuff.
Hey, you played in the CIT. Okay, so why did it work this year?
I think just now where we've developed this thing now to where we have core pieces. We got older, you know, it's not older. Like, there's a cheap way to get old that doesn't work. And I think that's, there's going to self-correct itself at some point where we'll realize
transfer.
Yeah. Taking that 22-year-old that's sitting in the portal doesn't get you old. Old is, to me, you gotta get experienced. You know, we have, you know, a fifth year guy in the program at our five spot, a third year guy at our four spot, a 4 year guy at our, he's played 120 games here at our point guard spot. Like, those guys know our system in and out. You know, we run a million sets, we run them, do a million different things. And I can just say, like, they name the plays. So what do you want to call this wrinkle? And they already know the verbiage and they name it themselves. So it's that's a critical point in winning college basketball.
What was it like to win the league?
You know, at the moment, you know, I'm always, I don't do a great job celebrating.
And same way.
You know, like, we won championships at Findlay, and I remember looking in the crowd with a minute left saying, okay, there's a kid right there that's going to be on our team next year. I'm going to go get this kid. Like, you know, already, you know, I'm going to turn this into a recruiting event. And even this is like, okay, my first thought process, okay, yeah, this is awesome. Great. We achieved this goal. We expected to. But I know there's going to be a day I'm going to look back and say, hey, you know, 20-4 in a conference championship here at a place where, you know, when we took the job, everyone's like, what, you know, there's no chance. What are you doing? Like, this, you know, yeah. A lot of folks, quite frankly, that were very against the move in my circle and saying, nah, I don't think you're arrogant.
Can't win there. That's what everybody said. You know, can't win there. I had a friend who was trying to help out the former AD, you know, and they were like, you know, the feedback they got from everybody was, you can't win there. And then now here you are winning. And I just wonder if there was, if you took joy. Okay, so then you get to the conference tournament. Now you're champions of the league. You guys are actually leaving the league to go to even bigger league. What went wrong?
Yeah, you know, we ran out of gas a little bit. In reality, it was, there's a million things you look back, you watch and you say, I'd do this a little differently. We're a no excuse program. We're our 11th day on the road. Maybe we don't stay on the road that long, because, you know, we had our final three conference games were road games. And it was tricky with COVID, right? Because you don't want to be in airports. You don't want to go back where we're on spring break here. So we decided to stay on the road. And by that day 11, I woke up and I was tired. And if I'm tired, I know they're tired. But you can't show that. So we were like, okay, if we can get through this semifinal game, we thought our adrenaline would carry us through the final. It was our mindset, but we knew we had to get through that. We had a taxing quarterfinal game. We were, you know, pressing and trying to do all these things that we had kind of saved for the tournament. We didn't show a lot of our press during the year, but we knew it would be good for us in the conference tournament. And then, you know, my point guard's cramping, he's out, you know, and we shoot 10 free throws in 45 minutes. Our lead guard's just a mini Zion Williamson, and he, you know, his hip is killing him. He got, you know, just banged on the floor over and over, and he just started hobbling. I'm like, oh no, I can kind of see. But we had great looks. I mean, we really did. I mean, I think you look back at it, and you always beat yourself up. I mean, I can remember every possession without watching film of all those games, and you just say, you know what, we had great looks, and the ball didn't go in, and. You know, Hail Mary three at the end of the clock for them here, and then a loose ball scramble, buzzer beater. I mean, you just those things happen. It's the game. That's the game. That's how it goes.
How do you process that? Because you had, and this is like, this is no disrespect to Pat Ewing, but his team finished 8th place in the Big East, right? And they play well, you know, a little bit of some depleted teams, whatever. But they win the conference. People celebrate Pat Ewing like, man, Georgetown. Like, whereas, and I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah.
Whereas you take over a program was terrible, win six your first year, win the league 24, and that, now it's like, well, did they really have a great year? You had an incredible year. How do you process that and share that with the kids, the sense of incredible accomplishment, despite the fact they don't get the announcement on TV, they don't get to go to the NCAA tournament?
That's our existence here. You know, we've got a small margin for error at these levels. I mean, I'm having been at this level now, I got such a high respect, not only for anyone that's kind of like took on a challenge or tried to do a rebuild or whatever. I mean, that's why I respect Coach Krueger just so much more after going through this process, because the rebuild programs is just such a different energy that it takes. And because like those things, like you're like exactly what you're talking about, you're managing a different feeling when you're sitting at 20-3 and you're staring at, if I lose this game, our season's over, you know, versus say, you know, you get, I remember talking with, you know, Mark Durgin, he was talking about when going from Wichita State to Texas A&M, and, you know, all his coaches that we had great conversations with, but like you said, he goes, a lot of those years, we had unbelievable years and you're not getting the tournament there. And it was at Texas A&M. We knew we were going to be one of six or seven teams that gets in. And at these levels, it's just different. And your margin for error for coaching is way less. I mean, I hate this. Even at high school level, I respect high school coaches. No shot clock. You play against Stu Vetter and see what happens if you get down six. You might not get the ball back the rest for two quarters. So you learn. Dan,
it's so true. Like, hey, I coach little kids now in AAU basketball. And you start to learn, like, okay, a lot of running clock until the last 2 minutes. And so if there's a foul fest, if you're winning, there's a foul fest, that shortens the game a ton if you have an inferior team. You don't have to hold the ball. You just, guys, a foul, it just takes forever. And you learn so much. Okay, so if you were to give advice to a young coach who's just getting his first head coaching job, what's the best advice you can give them?
Know exactly who you are. No, I mean, sit down and figure out exactly who you are as a individual, as a leader. What do you stand for? And that's your North Star. So when you start getting sideways and start questioning what you're doing, because everyone's going to question what you're doing, no matter what. First missed basket, you're going to be questioning what you know. And so you better have who you are sorted out real quick. And there's
going how do you know that if you're a young coach? A lot of times you don't know who you are when you get that.
You're right.
So who are you? Todd Simon is who? When you say this is who I am.
Toughness. I mean, you're gonna have to be mentally tough. Like, you know, we're not. We come into this thing with. I always use the term relentless enthusiasm. You know, you're not gonna knock me off. I get it. You know, there's more reasons to not succeed, particularly with the way I've came through the business, than to succeed. So you can't listen to any of that stuff. And controlling your controllables is such a huge deal. Like, we know what we are, we have confidence in what we do. And then at the end of the day, like, there's, like I tell our team, we don't have any reason for nervousness or anything like, you know, that's a fear of the unknown. Because if you put your preparation in, and if you just remind yourself that every day, then there's no reason to be fearing the unknown. You did everything you possibly could. And I think those core values, but particularly that the toughness piece, I mean, we're always going to be an underdog mentality. We're going to find a way to just out tough people mentally or physically. One of the two has got to be our way.
Last thing. Okay, you guys are switching leagues, right?
Yep.
And so it's a higher level of ball. How do you sustain what you're doing at Southern Utah when you're going into a league that has a little bit higher caliber talent?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just the belief that I have here. You can always count what you don't have in terms of resources or ability to do this or that or the other thing. It doesn't matter. I tell myself that all the time. Like, when this happens or that happens or this cut or that cut, it doesn't matter. You have a ball, two buckets, and you better go find a team that's going to fight like crazy. And then you coach them up. and everything else is not even B, C, or D. That's X, Y, Z. That's way down the list. So we've got to find this. The answer is always in finding great players or guys with great ceiling that will potentially reach their ceiling, and then coaching the absolute mess out of them. And that's where your answers are. That's what it is.
Okay. Again, this is the actual last thing. Having seen both sides of it from Finley to now, like, you know, that what you're talking to on the phone, and now obviously the eval process without anything live for last year is even more difficult. How do you know if the kid has good character, right? Like you're a little bit off the radar there, but you can't have one of these kids run around and ruining your name and your program. How do you know you're getting the right character when you have such limited individual interactions with them? Because when you're at an out of the way place, like, you cannot have somebody who's going to get in trouble. How do you know? And you're going to get more out of them, but there's a balance, right? You got to have talent and you got to have character, and obviously character beats talent when talent has no character. But how do you know? Because some guys are not what they portray themselves to be.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal question. That's what we face all the time. And kids have gotten great at mimicking and to say the right things. I mean, and you know, I think that's where I go back to that Finley experience, you know, and seeing how some of the chameleon almost during the recruiting process where they kind of look one way but maybe act another or it. And I think it's all about fit. For us, we're never going to use all of our evals. That's not realistic for where we're at, to go see a kid seven times and sit down with them and get to really know. So we have to be, our relationships have got to, we have to, I tell our staff, we need to lead the nation in relationships, because right, we need to get the honest truth, because everyone's got a guy for you. But you need to know everything about that guy. I need the guy to be like, hey, no, hey, I know what you're about. This is going to be the issue. Like, just cut into me real. And honestly, in the recruiting process, I give it to kids pretty real. Hey, if you're into the club scene, if you need to do this, if you need to do that, if you need to be doing this at 3 o'clock on Tuesday, don't come. There's a lot of players out there, but it's not going to work here. And I say that to probably every recruit at some point, like, it's not going to work here if you're XYZ. And most of the time I say, believe me, I'm just telling you, it's not going to work here. And I think you can get, as when your players talk to guys, the players can get better intel, especially when you get a core group of guys that are about what you're about. You know, they can say, hey, this is not one of our guys. This isn't one of us. This guy's this. You know, they start to identify it. That's very important. I mean, that's as big a thing as we deal with here, is to get the right people that want to be great. And just, a lot of times some guys that make mistakes have a good heart. I can deal with that all day long.
So how do you make sure that you have the right character in your guys?
I think in the evaluation process, one thing you have to, these young men are so good at saying the right things, right? They watch LeBron. I've seen it. I've been on the other side, listen to them almost chameleon, like, be able to kind of flip that switch on and tell coaches what they want to hear. And every kid's a gym rat. Everyone's got a guy. At that level, probably they are, but college is a different animal. So who's going to change when they get outside, their comfort zone, get to college where freedom is a little bit different. And so I think you need to find guys that really love the game, love the process. I mean, there's a lot of guys that love it, like playing basketball, but playing basketball and being a Division I basketball player are two very different things, right, as you know. And one of the things, your network is so important. You know, when we talk about leading the nation in relationships, because those relationships are going to tell you about a guy. But for us, our evaluations kind of come down, we want to find guys that are competitors, guys that are just tenacious competitors. Sometimes that guy that's throwing a fit and punting the basketball is mad because he's losing, not because he's got any problem. You know what I mean? Like, I want some of those guys. Like, I don't want guys that be like, oh, gee whiz, well, we lost, let's go to a movie. That's not, you know, I'm stewing for 4 days after we lost. You're like, I want guys like that, that are still salty on Tuesday after a Friday loss. Like, I'm good with that. You know, I want to find guys that can laugh at themselves. You know, we're going to be a enthusiastic program, but like, you got to have, if guys that can laugh at themselves a little bit are pretty secure. I think it takes a little bit of security, self-confidence to be able to laugh at yourself. And so that's another characteristic we look for. And, you know, lastly, you know, you just look for guys that you can, talk to. I think it's underrated thing, because I think guys that you can talk to, yep, and they're engaged and they're, yep, asking questions. The guys that ask questions, listen to what you just said. The guys that give you like the, yeah, okay, cool, coach, like that never ask any questions, that's me. You're like, okay, wait a minute, this guy's not, he's not playing along, yeah, but he's not engaged.
And the conversation thing is interesting. Mike Montgomery, my brother, was there. He had it was funny. There was a really talented guard. Let's not name him. He went to another Pac-12 school. He's very, and Greg was like, we could get him. And he's like, all right, put me on the phone with him. And he had a 5-minute conversation with him. And he's like, pass. And Greg's like, I don't think you understand. Like, this kid's a McDonald's All-American. Like, he can really hoop. He's like, you know, he plays hard. He defends. He competes. He's like, pass. Can't have a conversation with him. If I can't have a conversation with him, how is he going to survive at Cal? How is he going to play for me? Mm-hmm. And that was his, that was like his first safety net as a coach, which was, I just don't care about your background. Don't care about anything. Can I have a conversation with you? It's a really, it's an interesting litmus test. Really is.
It is, you know, and I want to, the way you filter through some of these candidates, I want to hear stories. I ask these players to tell me a story, because it's easy to say, well, I'm a, you know, or if I'm talking to a coach and say, hey, this guy's a gym rat, give me an example. Like, give me an example of why this guy helped you win 20 games, or give me an example. You know, and we don't.
It's like the Gutierrez thing, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, all right. Last thing, you've been great with your time. Okay, now there's the balance of, you've been scratching and clawing just to get a head coaching job. You get one, you build it. Now you got a winner. Okay? How do you balance the sweat equity you have at Southern Utah, knowing that you're kind of going to have to continue to add on playing better teams, right? Like, I don't know if Southern Utah fans understand. It's like when Utah State went to the Mountain West, or when, right? Like, Utah State had won in the Big West and in the WAC. Now they get to the Mountain West and they're not winning. Like, hey, the players are all better here, and yeah, we have WAC level players. Okay, so how do you balance out that with somebody else who says, hey, Todd Simon's a builder, man, and you know, we're going to give you 5-6 years to come and build at a different level with a greater paycheck, but then again, you don't have the sweat equity you have with the folks at Southern.
Yeah, you know, those are bridges you kind of cross when they get there. You know, I'm so where my 2 feet are. I'm a, you know, make the big time where you're at, you know, and that's always kind of been my thing. And I've been very upfront with my AD, said, let's make this into the next jump. You know, let's do the best we can to, instead of saying, hey, we got to go from here to XYZ, like, let's try to make this the next place. And I think that's just kind of my focus. And I think everything else, you know, I haven't had a resume in my entire career doing this. You know, yeah. I don't have one. Like,
yeah, no. They always tell you, you have to send your resume. You have no chance of getting the job, right? So, well, I mean, like, look, dude, from newlyweds having 12 teenagers in your house to winning a league championship at a place they said you can't win, it's been a pretty wild ride, and we're just like in the very first part of it.
No, that's the best part about it. We feel like we're just getting started, you know, and that's our whole deal. For me, I've been fortunate. I've worked for great people, had great mentors, and, you know, I'm continuing to try to collect mentors, try to find more people to talk to, learn from. But I just want to be better at my craft the next game than I was the last game, you know, as a coach. And if I just keep doing that and our whole program keeps that mentality, we're going to keep getting better, you know, and keep getting better, eventually going to reach your goal. So that's kind of just as simple as it sounds simple. That's what I wake up in the morning thinking.
Hey man, congrats on an incredible season. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, my thanks to Coach Simon for joining us. A reminder, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you download podcasts. You can also download the Doug Gottlieb Show. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.